All right, remember, the machine knows if you're lying. First statement, Carvana will give you a real offer on your car all online.
False.
True, actually. You can sell your car in minutes.
False? That's gotta be...
True again. Carvana will pick up your car from your door, or you can drop it off at one of their car vending machines.
Sounds too good to be true, so true.
Finally caught on. Nice job. Honesty isn't just their policy, it's their entire model. Sell your car today, too.
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another week of Selective Hearing. I'm your host, Julie DeMar, and this week I am here with very special guest, Brandy Morgan, and we are going to just talk to you about life today. So, you know, sometimes life gets to life and for all of us, and we don't necessarily know what to do to get out of that or where to go. So me and Brandy are going to share some advice with you, some tips with you, and Brandy's going to share her story with the hopes of encouraging you and motivating you and inspiring you to just keep going. So if you are at home, in your car, at work, listening to me when you're not supposed to, turn your speakers up because this is a conversation that you do not want to miss. So Brandy, thank you for being here with me today.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited.
So I'm just going to jump right in with Brandy because Brandy has, for all of you listening today, Brandy has a story. And her story is really about trials turning into triumph. And I'm going to give Brandy the floor so she can share a little bit of that with you today. Brandy, you want to kind of give everybody a backstory about you?
I don't know if we got enough time, but I'll try to make it short. Thank you for having me here. As Julie mentioned, my name is Brandy Morgan, and my journey started maybe about 7 or 8 years ago where I was in the Bay Area, California, and I was homeless for a year and a half with my youngest child, my son. In that experience, one, it's just hard being homeless. Two, being a single parent with a kid being homeless is just that much more traumatic, right? It took a lot of inner work as well as outside help for me to make it where I am today. I really had to search within myself and remind myself that my current circumstances in that moment did not define who I was or what I was capable of achieving in my life. Once I locked in on that, everything started to change for me. We were in and out of shelters in my car. From there, from one shelter, we were able to get into a transitional housing program with the YWCA. That lasted for a year. And then from then on, it just kind of took off.
I think that this is a super important conversation to have, especially today, you know, with me not going, jumping into politics and that rabbit hole, but with the economy. In the condition that it's in today with, like, we'll just say just inflation. I feel like we are all one step away from a bad day. Like, it can happen to any of us. And like, a lot of times when people speak about homelessness, they don't really know what they're talking about. And I'm speaking just from my experience with having conversations with people who make comments that are based on their beliefs and not based on facts. So I would like you to share, for those who may not quite understand how this can happen, because like I said, I know I've even been there. Like, I know, like, we are all one step away from, you know, something happening and us having to ride through that storm. So what was that like for you? What caused that for you?
So without getting too deep into it myself, I was in a domestic violence situation, and it was either continue to be in that situation or be homeless. I chose to be homeless. And it wasn't an easy choice. It wasn't something like, I think I want to be homeless today. That wasn't it. You know, you reach a breaking point in relationships and in circumstances. I felt like the risk was greater for me to stay where I was versus to leave and figure it out on my own. And that's one of the blessings of what I do is I'm able to take that lived experience and pay it forward to help support others. Because I just coming from the Bay Area, it's super expensive to live out there. I know people that are working at Google that are making like six-figure salaries that are homeless. have a great job, but just can't afford to live out there. So they went and bought a motor home or a van, and they're living in the parking lot, showering at work, using the work facilities, because, you know, Google hooks their employees up. But I mean, in any case, it just takes a second for you to go from where you are to being on the streets, being homeless by yourself, with your family, with friends. It doesn't have to be a domestic violence. It doesn't have to be financially, you know, there's mental health issues that cause people to become homeless. And it's a real issue that I think people take lightly. I don't think they really understand the repercussions of what happens to individuals when they end up in those types of situations. And if you don't have a strong mental constitution, you just end up repeating that cycle. It's really hard to get out of it once you've locked into the negativity.
And there's a lot of it. People like to, they like to say horrible things. And like I said, it's based on beliefs and not on facts. So during that time, what was your state of mind like? Because it wasn't just you.
No.
You had your baby with you. Can you share a little bit about that experience?
A lot of crying, a lot of prayer, a lot of crying in private to try to save face in front of my son and stay strong. And really just trying to make the situation as, like, his routine as regular as possible. So I tried to keep his routine up as far as when we would wake up, shower, stuff like that. Granted, we weren't showering in the same place all the time. And sometimes I had to give up my food because he was still hungry. So I went to bed hungry, stomach growling, hurting. But you do what you do as a parent. And I mean, I know people that have apartments that are living on Section 8 that still wonder, you know, how are they going to feed their kids today, the next day, the day after that? So I know I'm not alone in that. And I had great support systems. Like, my friends were amazing. They would allow us to come over and out shower when they could, or spend the night if they had the space. I had some friends that allowed us to just come over and cook. The only deal was whatever I cooked, they could get a plate. And, you know, I would do it anyway. So it was little things like that that add up that make that journey so much easier, versus not having any kind of support or people just dogging you out because now all of a sudden you're in a tough situation.
I know, like, in the beginning you mentioned, like, you had, like, you went into shelters and the YMCA helped you with transitional housing and then you kind of took off from there. But do you think from your experience that there are, like, sufficient resources and programs for people who are struggling?
Absolutely not. Not enough funding, not enough resources, not enough people that understand. Case managers are so over inundated with cases that they don't have the ability to really focus on families to help them get to that next level. As I mentioned before about that mental constitution, if you aren't mentally strong enough to go and find services for yourself and then maybe bring them back to your case manager, like, hey, can you help me get in this program? You're going to be stuck in that cycle. You have to be willing to find stuff for yourself. One program that helped me that I found through a friend was called Dress for Success, which is in Milpitas, California, for all my California people. And what that did is it taught me, or it retaught me, interview skills. It provided me with interview clothes and accessories. It helped me rebuild my confidence. It gave me mock interviews, and it gave me opportunity to meet with hiring managers that would come in to speak with us. And some of them hired on the spot when speaking with us. So I went from being homeless and jobless, because I lost my job right about a month or so before I became homeless. So it helped me get a job at Walmart as a supervisor. And then from there, I moved up. I didn't give up on myself. Walmart will work you like a pack mule. If you're okay with that, then go ahead and work there. But I was not okay with that. I couldn't afford to not be with my kids on holidays, especially when I'm a single mom. Who else are they going to, you know, who are they going to go with? Where am I going to go? And Walmart wasn't understanding that. So I had to continue my journey. I ended up getting an amazing mentor, and a gentleman named Walter Wilson, who is the CEO and founder of the Minority Business this consortium in the Bay Area, he kind of just became not just a mentor, but like a second dad. And I think that having those supports, those personal supports, really what made the difference, because the resources are lacking, the funding is lacking, the case managers don't have the patience or the time to handle the caseloads. I think that's part of what makes the cycle continue to repeat, is that lack of care, the lack of empathy, the lack of funding, and the lack of resources. And a lot of case managers aren't looking into other programs. You know, it's like they're given a book and they're like, I'm going to stick to this little binder of information, when there are other programs that are being established every day to try to end homelessness. Mm-hmm. So putting in the work is what really makes that difference.
And that is what brought you to, you mentioned all the support that you had. That's beautiful that you had that. We know that there's some people out there that don't have that. But then that put you in a different state of mind as well, because in our pre-show, you mentioned to me like, okay, my lived experience makes me want to help others. So can you talk about the work that you are pursuing now?
Yes, ma'am. So although I had all these like personal supports, it wasn't consistent. And I had to relearn how to support myself, like as an individual, not just as a mom. When I developed Morgan Legacy Group, I wanted to be that support for others that I felt I needed when I was at my lowest point. And what that looks like for me is creating a safe space for my clients, allowing them to feel seen and heard, knowing that they belong, not just in the session with me, but here in the world. We all have something special and unique to offer. You know, some of us are loud in sharing it, and some of us are kind of drawn back and they're not sure if they want to share it. But let me tell you, if I didn't share my story and my experience, I don't think I would have gotten as far as I am today. I don't think I would have been able to get out of homelessness in a year and a half. I could still very well be in that cycle. But it's having those supports, knowing that you add value. Basically, like if they don't have a chair for you at the table, build your own table or bring your own chair, however you want to look at it. That's what my mindset was. Like, okay, I want to create a space where people feel like if they're being pushed out of the main table, come sit at my table. I got you. Mm-hmm. We can do this. I will hold you accountable. It's like tough love. I want you to succeed and I'm here to help you, but I'm not going to do the work for you because nobody did the work for me to get me where I am. I had to invest in myself, both mentally, physically, spiritually, and financially. And you have to be willing to put in that time to get yourself out of those situations.
Yeah, I agree with that so much. I love how you mentioned too that some people, because everyone's journey isn't the same, and how some people really are loud with it and some people, you know, keep it close and they do their work differently. Like, I agree with you. I'm one of those people that's loud with it. Like, I had no voice for so long, wasn't allowed to have a voice for so long. Mm-hmm. And once I was like, wait a minute, you are not going to keep me quiet anymore. Who are you? Like, and that who are you was extended to everybody. It didn't matter if you were friends, family, somebody on the street. Exactly, who are you to tell me that I can't live and be me? To tell me that I'm not worthy or capable or I shouldn't be seen and heard? And I started talking and now I'm not going to stop.
Right? Like, why allow somebody to shrink you or dim your light? Like, we all have a story. And it took me a while to feel confident and comfortable enough to share my story, because it is very personal and there are a lot of judgmental people out there. Mm-hmm. But if I could do it, anybody can do it. And the only way you're going to know how to do it is if I share my story and I include my experiences in the work that I provide with my clients.
I keep circling to this quote. People are like, oh, she said it again. It's going to be in a couple episodes, but it's because someone told me and I thought it was like, it was so simple, but it was so powerful. Sometimes living your life grants others the permission to live theirs.
Amen.
Just something that simple. And I've been holding on to it since she said it to me. Like, you know what? That is true. That's so true. Like, something that simple. Someone watching you who may not want to speak up just yet, or who isn't ready to speak up just yet, who is finding their way back to themselves, watching you do it, it'll be like, could put that thing in them to make them be like, yup, I'm about to do it. I'm going to do it. I can't do it. And that's what's so beautiful about this work. You said, like, we all have that special thing in us. What do you feel like that special thing is about you that's helping move you to your purpose?
Only one thing.
You can tell me a bunch. We can talk about them all if you want. We can.
No, I mean, honestly, I'm a very loving and caring person. Like, I'll give you the shirt off my back if I have it to give. And sometimes that's gotten me in trouble. Like, people will take that kindness for weakness. But don't get it twisted. I'm not weak. I'm not a weak-minded person. I'm not a weak individual. But I am a very caring and empathetic individual. And sometimes I step on my own toes because of that. But honestly, like, support, being that support. Like, I don't care if you need to, if we have a whole session and you just want to vent, I'm here for it. You need somebody to cry with you, I'm here for that. You want to just look at each other, count to three and start screaming, I'm here for that. You want to work on advancing your career or personal growth, I'm here for all of it. I'm not just going to focus on one thing. Like, that's why I call myself a soulful coach, because I work from the soul out. This is whole person support from A to Z and everywhere in between. Like, I want people to know that you are not alone. If you waking up and you stubbed your toe and you just want to complain about it, you can call me. I don't care if we have a session today or not. Go ahead and call me. I'm going to cuss out that table or the couch or whatever you stubbed your toe on. I'm going to cuss it out for you. Because sometimes we just need to know that we have somebody in our corner regardless of the situation. And I didn't have that. I didn't feel like I had that. I had to go search for my support. And so when you come to me and you work with me and you come to Morgan Legacy Group, that's it. It's an umbrella. It's covering you from head to toe. And I will support you in every single endeavor while you work with me, because I know what it feels like. And I don't ever want anybody to feel like that when they're around me, friends, family, or clients.
I knew it. Here I go. I knew it, you guys. Me and Brandy, during the pre-interview, we talked. And I have these interviews where I always feel the energy of the person I'm talking to when we do our pre-shows. But then I have these interviews with people like you, and I feel like God has been putting more people like you in my path, where I just feel your energy. I feel like the story. I'd be like, that's going to be when we get to recording day. That's going to be good. Like, I'm like, the people are going to love this, because that's going to be so good. It's the energy you bring to it, the passion you bring to what you do, the love and the care that you bring to what you do. And it shows. It literally comes through when you're speaking, and you can feel it. At least I know I feel it. I felt it in our pre-interview. I feel it now. And like, everybody, so Brandy does something that is like one of my favorite things, and it's one of her favorite things too. So we're going to talk about things that are impactful, things that can help you get started. And journaling is that thing that we're going to talk about right now.
So I lost my dad. It'll be 2 years in April. And I'm the baby of five. I was a daddy's girl. So journaling was a big part of my healing process, especially when it came to grieving. And so much so that I developed my own soulful self-care guided journal. And I mean, I share all the tips and tricks and tools that I used on my healing journey, from my favorite, which is ritual bath soaks, taking that time to really be intentional with what you add into that water, with your herbs and your candles and your oils, even the smells, you know, because everything can be a trigger for us. And it could be a positive trigger or it could be a negative trigger. So paying attention to those little details before you get into the bathtub, set your intentions, you know, even make it like a witch's brew that you're going to soak into. And I know people might not necessarily agree with the witch comment, but man, it, look, I'm an alchemist at heart and in spirit. So people are just, they're either going to like it or they're not, but that's who I am. And affirmations, being able to uplift myself. The hardest part of that was the mirrored affirmations, being able to look myself in the eye and say these positive things about myself. Who am I to feel this way about myself? To the point where I'm diverting my own gaze. I can't even look my own reflection in the mirror, straight in the eyes. That was one of those light bulb moments for me. Like, okay, this is some inner work that you really need to focus on. Because if you can't look at yourself, how do you expect other people to be able to look at you? And that spoke volumes to me. Yeah, working with affirmations, doing ritual baths, creating lists. I'm a list person. I like to write stuff down. I like to remind myself. And just letting out your feelings for the day. Your thoughts, letting it all out. It doesn't even have to be fully structured in a sentence. It could be blah, you know, as long as you getting out those feelings and those emotions, allow them to release from your body so that you can move forward and grow. Because the more we hold on to the stuff, all the stuff, the harder it is for us to move forward.
Mm-hmm. While you're talking about the bath, I was like, oh my gosh, like, so the bath is my favorite thing to do. But let me tell you, so I like to make my bathroom smell like, you know how when you walk into like one of those spas that have like, they have like the soaking pools and stuff like that in there too. Like it's like that strong eucalyptus spearmint, like that those kind of scents.
Love it.
So I love that. So I buy like bath salts and bubble baths and candles and, you know, like the mint and stuff to put in there when I go take a bath. So my 3-year-old has been watching this. So he doesn't think that he's supposed to take a bath without all the things. So he will be like, okay, let's go take a bath. And he will run around and grab Epsom salt bath, a bubble bath, oil. Like he, and then he'll have the nerve to be like, Mom, you forgot to light my candle. And I'm like, excuse me, sir, because what?
Fancy.
And he's like about that every single night. And I'm like, so you don't want to use the Paw Patrol bubble bath anymore? Because my stuff is coming up short now when it's time for me to get in there, because
look,
I'm giving it
my
to you.
Spirit smile. Like I'm sitting here, y'all can't see it, but I'm sitting here cheesing. That like, so I'm not a very religious person. I'm more spiritual, but I know that there's a quote in the Bible that says, teach them in the way they should go and they will never stray. Mm-hmm. And I like, that's what came to my heart when you were sharing this story with me, because he knows what he needs to do. Mm-hmm. He knows. He's like, okay, I'm not just refreshing my body, I'm refreshing my spirit, Mom. Come with the salts, come with the oils. Like, I love that.
He will not. I got this big thing of Paw Patrol bubble bath. He won't touch it. Okay. Like he's done
you
with
have
it.
To send me your address, because I'm going to make him his own little blend, and I'm going to have to send it to you guys so that he can have his own little stash and Mom get to use up her own stuff.
He's going to have to let me borrow some of what you send in. Okay. Because he owes me. Look, he owes me. You got me. We have to share. He owes me a couple dollars. So yeah, I'm a dip in a little bit and see how he likes it. But he does, my 5-year-old isn't so much into it, but my 3-year-old, like every night for bath night, this is him now.
Oh, I love that.
So, yeah. I love too, when you're talking about journaling, like, so the things that I love about journaling is I always like check, I do check-ins, like how am I feeling? Like checking in with myself is something that I require of me now. Because I used to put everybody's feelings first and never checked in with me. And then I was doing that to a point where I started feeling guilty of checking in with me or having feelings and reservations and, you know, whatever it was surrounding me. I used to think that I wasn't allowed to, and I was wrong for that. And so I always check in with me first before I do anything with anybody in the house. Kids, y'all got to wait. Husband got to wait. Dog got to wait. Everybody has to wait until I check my temperature and see where I'm at today. And then I always move on from there. Like, okay, so I'm feeling like this. I ask myself, what do I need? What do I need to make today better? What do I need to, you know, move through today, what's gonna, and then after I do my needs, then I start, okay, I start affirming things for myself. Like, I'm gonna be okay. If it's a rough day, I'm gonna be okay. I've already said I'm only gonna do these three things because I'm feeling a little heavy. So I'm not gonna overwhelm myself and snowball this into something else. Like, those three things are the three things we got for the day, and that's it. Like, and I kind of go through this task, this checklist or whatever with myself, and then I move out to everybody else. Then it's like, hey, what do you need, husband? What do you need, kids? Like, what does the dog need, and what are we doing for the day? But I stopped being like, the kids, my husband, the dog. I have a shower today. That's a real thing. Like, I haven't showered today. I haven't eaten today. I haven't, and moms probably can really relate to, I haven't been to the bathroom once today by myself.
My kids are older and I still don't go to the bathroom by myself because my dog acts like he one of the kids. But I love that you are not just setting boundaries with others with your journaling, but setting boundaries with yourself. And I talk about that in my book, my guided journal. I tell a story about basically, you know, how people come up to you and they need support and you want to give that support, but how are you pouring into yourself? Like, you can't pour into others from an empty glass. So how are you refilling your own glass? And self-care is one of the tools that we have in order to fill our glass so we can continue to pour into others. And I used to put my kids first, being a single mom, everything, kids, 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 kids. And then something triggered for me. And I was like, wait, if I'm not doing good, how am I supposed to take care of them? So I got to be able to focus on myself. I got to make myself whole so that I can continue to care for them optimally. Cause in other words, they're getting a lesser version of their mom and they don't deserve that. And I don't deserve that. So I had to set those boundaries as well and say, okay, my self-care is first. If I'm going to take care of everybody else, I need to take care of me too. And it's been a game changer. It honestly has. And not just the words of affirmation, but those words of activation. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't, some things I don't need to affirm anymore because I already know. I already know. So now let's activate it. Let's move forward from the affirmations and let's activate this. Let's turn this into reality. Let's manifest this and bring this into our lives.
And it's so dope when it comes to fruition because, like, there's times, like, especially when I first started, where it was like just looking like, for me, like, I was just telling myself, it's not gonna happen. What are you doing? Like, the grind is so slow, you know, like, it's a slow roll in this, everybody. And I was just like kind of beating myself up. And then one day I looked up and saw like all the things that were happening. And I was just like, that no more. I'm not telling myself like, when is it gonna happen? It's not gonna happen. I'm working at it. I'm not just talking about it. I'm doing it, even if I'm taking those small steps every day, and I'm getting there. So I'm just gonna remind myself, like, I even look back at my journals. Like, one of my journals helped me write a book. Like, it's like, I did it.
Yeah.
I'm doing it. I'm moving in it. I'm moving at the pace too, is something that I want people to understand. The pace in which you're moving and in which you're accomplishing is where you actually supposed to be. Like,
right. Divine timing.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So entrepreneurship is not for the faint-hearted. It is not. It's stressful. It's hard being all the things all at once for a business. But when you start now, you don't have money to hire people all the time. You have to be all the things all at once. But you also have to remember to be yourself and take a break and breathe and then be grateful, even for the little things. Like, we always want this, like, this big flashy show or this light saying, hey, you're here, you've reached success. But success is different for everybody. And the fact that I can be here to create a legacy and show my children what it looks like to build a legacy, that's success for me. You know, like, Morgan Legacy Group was formed not just to honor the passing of my dad, but to build something that my kids can be proud of when I'm no longer here with them. Something that they can look back on and be like, that was my mom. She did that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and even if I don't become a millionaire, which is going to happen, it's going to happen. But let's just say if it doesn't happen for the next year or two, That doesn't mean that my work isn't valued, that I'm not bringing value to the table, that I'm not adding value to people's lives. Like everything, like you said, divine timing. It's not on our time, it's on the universe's time. And it took me a while to like accept that, because you know, we all now, I want it now, I want it now. And this is something my grandfather told me. He passed away when I was 10. I didn't understand it back then because I was too young. But now that I'm older and I've grown, I've had children, it's like I hear him clearly telling me. And he used to say, anything worth wanting is worth working hard for. And be leery of the things that come too easy, because nothing in life is easy. I apologize for that.
You're okay. We in the beginning of the show, we were talking about how our fur babies want to be a part of the interview. And look, there's our live studio audience, one of them. Mine fell asleep. When I used to do lives, my kids used to be in the background running around and screaming and stuff. And me and the audience just named them the live studio audience. So whenever they would do stuff, I'd be like, the live studio audience is participating again, because they were a part of it.
I mean, I like the creativeness. I like that they get to be part of the audience, because that's really what they watch everything that we do and they absorb it. So whether we want them to or not, they're paying attention. And so giving them the space to be themselves and finding a way to include them, even if it's just by calling them your live studio audience, I think that that's amazing as a parent and as an entrepreneur.
And I think it adds a little texture to the show, because it shows the people who may be thinking about jumping out here and doing certain things, like, hey, like you said, like we do all things. We do all things. Like everyone gets to sit back and they get to reap the benefit of me doing pre-pro and interviews and editing. Like you guys, like at this point, I'm baby Kanye. Like I taught myself how to be an audio engineer. Every episode you guys hear, I literally had to teach myself how to get the editing software, how to put it in there, how to edit it, and all this. Like, I know AI is trying to drive the world, and there's things we can put things in. But for me, like, especially being someone that came from like film and television, I would listen and overwatch and overlisten and all these. And I'd be like, I hear that. That shouldn't be there. Like, I go in and I'll take out all the or the ums and the ahs and the things that we naturally do when we're talking that we don't realize in conversation, and I'll just make a clean set of audio. And people don't realize, like, that takes hours on top of everything else to do. Like, that takes hours, but I do it because you guys need to hear this. Like, I really truly feel like that. Like, you guys need to hear this. When you're in your car, you might have got up this Monday and got in your car and said, I'm tired of whatever, ABC. I'm tired. And then we come in across your speaker with motivation that you probably needed today. So I'm about to be Kanye by the end of it. So he better watch out. But I'm just gonna keep going so that every Monday you guys can get these gems.
You know, and it's funny because there's like power in your purpose. And it could be, you know, somebody listening might be like, oh, she OCD. She got to get all them noises out. No, she is focused. You're driven by your purpose. You're trying to get the message out as clear as possible to your followers so that you can help them take that next step in their life. And people, sometimes they're so quick to judge that they're not thinking of the bigger picture. And just by you taking those extra little steps, you know, to take out those and those pauses or those deep breaths, it just shows how passionate you are about what it is that you do. And people like me who get to interview with you, we get to appreciate that passion and that strength that you bring to the table as an interviewer. So thank you. Thank you for doing all the little things by yourself and teaching yourself, because that's what makes this whole podcast so amazing, is that you've put yourself into it.
Thank you. And thank you for being here, 'cause like I just want you guys to be here to help. And I love talking to you guys. I share with the audience and with the guests all the time. Like every single time I sit down and talk to someone, I feel like I'm healing a little bit more too. So even though like the main focus is like I'm putting it out there for people who need it, I will walk away from episodes with things like, wow, you know, and especially if it's a day where I didn't know I needed that too. That made me feel good. That made me think about something in a different way. Like, yeah, even little tips. I'm like, I'm gonna try that. I didn't think of that, or that wasn't shared with me. That wasn't a tool that I learned yet. Let me give that a try and apply that and see how that works for me. I do it all the time. Like, it's really a way of me being in therapy too, kind of.
It's that energetic exchange where you feed off of each other, and then it just keeps that conversation going. And before you know it, you're like, dang, we're done already.
The hour be moving fast. I be like, real fast. So that's why I'm actually going to switch gears really quickly, everyone, because we are going to move into sickle cell awareness for a moment. And the reason for that, Brandy's going to share with you. But during our pre-show, we had a discussion about this also being something that you are passionate about and that you would like to discuss. So I want to talk about your best friend and how the loss of your friend impacted you and helped you with creating this mission as well.
Okay, so I'm just gonna apologize now in case I start tearing up because this is something that's very close to my heart. My best friend of 18 years, his name was Anwar Sean Hall. He passed away in 2009 from sickle cell crises. Although I kind of knew what sickle cell was, I really didn't know as much as I should have. So I took it upon myself in 2012 to start educating myself. In 2014, I became a California State Certified Sickle Cell educator, and I've just been advocating for sickle cell ever since. So, what a lot of people don't understand is that sickle cell disease affects over 100,000 individuals throughout the United States each year, predominantly affecting African American individuals, but it also affects Hispanic cultures, Asian cultures, Native American, Indian, and Middle Eastern cultures. So it's widespread. You could be Caucasian. It doesn't matter who you are. If you have blood running through your body, you can get it. Now, it is an inherited disease. So both your mother and father have to have either sickle cell trait or sickle cell disease for you to be able to get it. What happens is your red blood cells become deoxygenated and they go from being bioconcave in shape to being sickled shape. And for those who don't know what a sickle shape is, most of y'all know who the Grim Reaper is, how he's depicted, and he's carrying this staff with a blade on the edge. That blade is called a sickle. And a lot of old school farmers will know what a sickle blade is because they used to use it to cut down their produce and stuff. Basically, so it becomes sickled in shape and becomes very squamous and sticky, and they start to stick inside of your blood veins, causing blockages, which is what a crisis is. And they can happen anywhere in your body because blood flows everywhere in our bodies. Worldwide, sickle cell affects approximately 2 million individuals per year, but yet it is probably the least funded disease. We haven't had any real research since the 1970s because we don't have the funding for it. I think that that's a big issue because this is the number one hemoglobinopathy, and yet we don't have the funding to do research. You hear all the time, you hear people talk about cancer, you hear people talk about diabetes, lupus, but you don't hear anybody talking about sickle cell. Why isn't it a household name? You know, if I could advocate and raise awareness and help prevent one family from, or one person from feeling the loss that I felt when my best friend passed from a crisis, then everything that I do each day for the sickle cell community is worth it. They're the most amazing group of individuals you could possibly think of, and the strongest individuals you could think of. A lot of the times they choose to stay home and suffer in silence and go through a crisis because when they do decide to go to the hospital to get assistance, they're treated as drug seekers because the pain medication that they need to use is so strong that it is addicting. But they're not coming there for that. They've literally waited until they could not take it anymore before going to the hospital. So we've lost a lot of sickle cell warriors from that fact because they're just tired of being mistreated by the system. I thank you for allowing me to share this information on your platform because I really think that it's something that we need to, shine a light on.
I agree. When you brought it up and I was going through building out your package and I was like, how can I, make sure I create this beautiful transition that leads into you speaking about this? I was struggling with it. I was like, I want to make sure because I want to highlight this, and I wanted it to be just as important as everything else you've been discussing today. And I feel like it just flowed. I had no idea how I was going to do it, but it all came together.
And it's funny, it's very personal, but the more I talk about it, the more empowered I feel, but the more emotional I feel. Like, I wish I would have known the stuff that I know now when my best friend was around, because maybe he'd still be here. You know, maybe if I would have known that he didn't want to go to the hospital because he was being mistreated and people weren't listening to him and he wasn't getting the services and the pain control that he needed, you know, maybe he'd still be here. So that's something that I battle with personally. But as soon as somebody asks me about sickle cell, it just comes. It reels out. It flows. I can't help myself. I want the world to know about sickle cell so we can help these amazingly strong individuals live full lives. There's no cure for sickle cell. There's been a few people that have had positive, you know, bone marrow transplants. And that, on a side note, donate blood. The American Red Cross has a program called the Blue Tag Program. The Blue Tag Program saves your blood donations through the end of the blood regeneration cycle. There's a technical word and I can't think of it right now. But basically, the Blue Tag Program will hold your blood donations specifically for sickle cell patients. And then, you know, if within that time frame, there are no sickle cell patients that require assistance, like for transfusions, then they will open it to the rest of the general blood bank. So anybody who needs a transfusion can get it. But at the beginning, they hold it specifically for sickle cell patients. And it's the only blood donation program that I'm aware of in the United States that does that specifically for sickle cell patients. So if y'all did not like the American Red Cross before, let this be your reason
to like them. Yeah, that's another great thing to bring up, that sometimes we want to help, but we don't know what we can help with or how we can help. That is a way for you to do your part. And it doesn't take long. And it's really, really simple. I've donated blood before. It's not anything crazy, people. The craziest thing with me, to make y'all laugh for a second, is I'm just afraid of needles. So I need support when I go get shots, when I draw blood, when I give blood, because I'm borderline going to pass out. I can't even get my ears pierced. Like, my ears closed, I'm not even going to get them re-pierced. I'm like, mm-mm. I'll be on the floor.
I have to look away when I donate. But funny story, the last time I donated blood through the program, I wasn't expecting to hear this, but the guy was like, can I get some help over here? We got a squirter. Because he took the needle, and when he had pulled it out, my blood kind of squirted out with it. So that's what he was talking about. But I had never heard it phrased that way before. So, like, we had the whole clinic busting up laughing, and I did make kind of a bit of a mess with the squirt, but it lightened the mood. You know, donating blood is it can be scary, especially if you don't like needles, but it was definitely entertaining and it lightened the mood, and it just showed the human side of things and why we do what we do. It made me appreciate the moment even more, you know, that we were able to take something serious and still make it comical.
And sometimes, you know, that whole, we got to laugh, you know, they say we got to laugh to keep ourselves from crying. Sometimes that laughter comes in at the right time. Thank you for sharing that. And look at my Michigan accent coming out. Thank you for sharing that. And I just learned a lot from you in those moments as well. And I know that that was probably a little challenging for you, but thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. Giving me the space to share.
So I'm going to ask you a question before the big show question. And the question that I want to ask you is, today, if you can give anybody advice, I the way I structured it was anyone just specifically struggling with homelessness, but just advice in general, if you can give anybody that's struggling today advice that you feel could just help push them through these moments and help them, encourage them to keep fighting, what would it be?
Believe in the power of self. We're stronger than we think we are. I know that a lot of times for myself, I tend to be my own worst critic. So getting out of my own way was probably the biggest benefit I had. You know, take time to care for yourself. Take time to follow your dreams. Invest in yourself. whether it's time or money or, you know, spiritual practices, because even in your lowest moments, even in homelessness, there's rays of light that you can capture. Unless you have your head up and you're able to see those rays of light, you're not going to catch them. And it's hard to keep your head down and feel sorry for yourself when you're in those situations. But you have so much to offer this world, so much more than you think you do. You're doing yourself and the world a disservice by not shining your light and dimming yourself. So stand straight, fix your crown, and take up space. Take up as much space. Take up all the space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Gosh, you saying that just made me think of something that I'm about to butcher real bad, but it was along the lines of why would I limit my space to make you feel uncomfortable, or like something like that, like the space that I take up to make you feel more comfortable.
Miriam Williamson, that's one of my favorite quotes. I can't exact it either, but yes, yeah. Miriam Williamson, you guys should look that up. It's an amazing quote. And I think Nelson Mandela, he recited that quote in one of his speeches. Yeah.
I butchered it, but now you have where you can go get the exact verbiage. But yeah. But you get the drift. Like don't dim your light. Don't limit the space you take up. Just be you. So I'm gonna ask you my big show question, which is what does selective hearing mean to you?
Ooh. And you know, it's funny, when I first heard the name selective hearing, it kind of made me chuckle because I was told my entire childhood that I have selective hearing, mm-hmm. that I only hear what I want to, that I only listen to what I want to. And I kind of feel like it is still along that same line. Selective hearing is you pull out the parts that mean the most to you, that resonate the most to you, and you do with them what you need to move forward. So it's not necessarily a negative thing to have selective hearing, as it was implied to me when I was a child, because, you know, not everything that people say are going to resonate with you. So you got to take what you can from it and move forward. And that's what selective hearing is for me. Like, you know, taking what I can and using it to make my life better.
I was that kid too. That's why I named the show Selective Hearing.
Sounds like we had similar childhoods.
All the time. I'm like, oh, I got something for this. Now I own I took the power away from it being negative and turned it into something positive. Yes. So share with the listeners today how they can get your journal and how they can reach you so that they can talk to you about anything they want to discuss.
Okay, so my journal is for sale on Amazon, and it is titled Soulful Self-Care, A Journey of Healing Through Journaling. I know it's kind of a long title, but you'll find it there. You can also get it on my website, and you can book a free consultation with me at www.themorganlegacygroup.com.
And everyone listening, I am also going to put this information. So look, you're getting it another way. In the show details, it's going to be on my website on the resources page. And if you follow me at Selective Hearing Show on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, it will always be in the descriptions of the reels that I'm posting. And if you have not, go over to YouTube and hit that subscribe button so you can watch me and Brandy talking after you listen to us, okay? Take this information in again and again and again. So, Brandy, thank you for being here with me.
Can I add one thing?
Yeah.
A special surprise gift for all y'all. Anybody that books a consultation with me and mentions that they heard from this podcast, I will send you a free PDF version of my guided self-care journal just for listening to this podcast and mentioning it. So that's a $22 value added to your life for free.
See? So listen, don't just listen to this and then go away. You better get with Brandy, okay? And I'm going to be following up with Brandy, so I'm going to know what you're doing, okay? Just to let you know. So make sure that you take away all these beautiful gems that Brandy shared with us today. You go, you know, reach out to her, have that conversation, get that journal, you know, continue your journey, start your journey, whatever it is, just do it. Okay. I love just get up and do it. Make that time the right time right now. And I will be back next week. So until next time, this is Selective Hearing.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.